Our speaker today really doesn't need any introduction because he has been here on many occasions. He's a delightful speaker, a knowledgeable speaker, and he's going to talk today on the federal election 2008, will the Liberal Party survive? And in view of the French debate last night, I hope you'll speak in English today. Welcome, Peter.
Okay, well, as I'm sure most of you have noticed, there is an election campaign going on just now, a federal election campaign. When the campaign started, the initial question for everybody was, will Harper get a second term? I think we can take it. That one's been settled. We should move on to something else. It would take an incredible turnaround. So if that was a question in your mind, we're done. But that just takes us to a second, more refined question, and that was, can Harper win a majority? That question is still wide open. That's what's still left for us to wonder about right up to the last minute. We won't know until BC votes on the 14th, but that question is still open. But what the media has been working on for the last week, and therefore I have picked as the theme for our sermon today, is the question about how bad is the Liberal Party going to get hurt? It's obvious from the early going of this campaign, the Liberal Party is not doing particularly well. They are visiting levels of the public opinion polls that Liberals have never visited before and never wanted to visit. Therefore, the real question is how much the Liberal Party is being hurt and where we go from here. Jack Layton and the New Democrats say they're running for the Prime Minister's office. We all know what they'd really settle for and still party long into the night is becoming the official opposition. And on some figures, it looks like opinion is shifting enough that isn't quite the quixotic dream it usually is. So the topic to draw you in here completely unfairly, I took the most dramatic version of how bad will the Liberals get hurt and asked it in the forum, will the Liberal Party survive? For those of you who want to get on with more important things in life right away, the dramatic conclusion is yes. Therefore, I'll focus on what the real question was, which is how bad will the Liberals get hurt and what are their prospects of coming back? Now, the very fact that I get to ask the question and you don't just laugh out loud is a remarkable development in Canada. The Liberal Party of Canada is one of the great democratic success stories in the Western world. It is arguably the most successful political party from any competitive electoral system anywhere in the world. An amazing story. They have dominated the last century in Canadian politics. They have won far more elections than they've lost. A great success story. In the 1990s, as we came around the corner into the 1990s, the other major national party in Canada stumbled once and was gone in the blink of an eye. It was where the Liberals continued to dominate through that decade. So we once had two great national political parties. We got one left. It's the Liberals, making their success story even more dramatic, even more impressive. But now we are talking about how bad can it get for the Liberals. This is not the Liberal Party of the 1990s. This is the Liberal Party of the 21st century, and we have to use a whole different set of metaphors to describe them. So first of all, briefly, what is it that went wrong for the Liberals? Why are we talking this way about the greatest political party in Canadian history? The first thing that went wrong is what I can only describe as the great Jean Chrétien, Paul Martin Civil War. It was a civil war. There's no other way to describe it. Jean Chrétien was the leader of the Liberal Party who led them to three successive majority governments, something that has not been accomplished by very many prime ministers in Canada. How many? Three? He's one of the three. And he still got eased out of office by the challenger, Paul Martin. What you saw there was a coup d'etat or a palace revolution. This normally happens in third world countries. I was constantly astonished as we watched this drama going on that I was the only lunatic off in the corner saying, my God, it's a revolution. And everyone else was just, oh, thank God, Chrétien's gone. I'm tired of his accent. How great, we're getting the wonderful Paul Martin coming in his place, an exciting new era for Canada. and nobody wanted to talk about, that was a coup d'etat, folks. That was, normally there are troops and a few dead bodies in the hallway afterward, but it was still, you know, a coup d'etat, a palace revolution, a change of government, an elected leader being forced out. So kudos to Paul Martin for pulling off the impossible. And it isn't, how do you get rid of a person who wins three successive majority governments? And Paul Martin showed you how. So Paul Martin won, the Jean Chrétien supporters lost, but they went out mad. The winners came in smug, the losers went out stinging a bit, and the great Liberal Party machine sputtered from then on. I think they're still recovering from the damage they did to themselves, allowing Stephen Harper to reach the position he now has. The second thing that went wrong, this is not news for you, I'm just summarizing the past to move on to the present. The second thing that went wrong was ad scam, the great advertising scandal, which dogged Paul Martin in office and ultimately doomed his prime ministership. Now, in English Canada, it was just one more reason to say governments are corrupt, and this particular government was more corrupt than most, and let's really get angry at them, although the Liberals kept staving off the absolute collapse that always seemed to be about to happen tomorrow morning and never quite materialized. In Quebec, though, the damage was way, way worse. Quebec is still angry with the Liberals. Francophone Quebec is not about to forget ad scam, even if the rest of you start to leave it in the past. I may be exaggerating slightly, but what the heck, you know me. Okay, the ad scam is going to be for the Liberals what the World War I conscription crisis was for the Conservatives. It is the landmark event for Francophone Canada that will set the tone of political debate and take a party off center stage, at least for decades, maybe for generations. It was that big an event. The Liberal Party's history was its capacity to explain French Canada to the rest of us and us to French Canada. They have lost that capacity, and they show no signs of getting it back. If the Liberals do gain in Quebec, it's going to be in Montreal. That's not what we're talking about. In rural Quebec, the Liberal Party of Canada is gone, and that's an enormous loss for them. It's also a loss for us, but that's a different talk. Okay, that's the second thing that went wrong. The third thing that went wrong was the new election funding rules, Jean Chrétien's poison chalice to the new leader. Now, the new rules say that they limit the amount of money that anybody can give to any political party in any calendar year. And secondly, they ban contributions from corporations. And in the place of that, they create public funding, which is basically $1.75, cost of living adjusted, we'll stay with $1.75, per year for everybody who voted for you in the most recent general election. That's the new set of funding rules. Now, okay, a statement some of you will be surprised by, I'll make it anyway. The Liberal Party is the party that was the most dependent on large contributions from wealthy individuals and corporations. I know most people are convinced that's always been the Conservatives. Well, you're wrong. You've been wrong for decades about that. You're even more wrong about this new reborn Conservative Party that has no such connections. If the Conservative Party is the party of big business, how come they can't buy a seat, they can only steal them, in Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver? If big business can't deliver a single lousy seat, what good are they? Okay, the answer is they can deliver seats, they deliver it to their party, and their party is the Liberal Party. The Liberals have been devastated by these new funding rules. The Conservatives and New Democrats had to invent the new technique that matters. Lots of little contributions from lots of people repeated over and over again. That's how you raise money in the new world. The Liberals are still learning it. Therefore, the Liberals took ages to pay off their debts from Paul Martin's disastrous campaign. They've taken ages to build up any kind of a war chest, whatever. They're really hurting. That's why Stéphane Dion has rented the old airplane, right? There's a reason for that. It's not a gesture, it's necessity. The Liberals are short of money campaigning. That's why Dion had to sit there with a smile on his face while Harper slapped him over and over again for a whole year. You know, no choice, it's funding reality. So that's a colossal problem for them, and it's not going away. The fourth thing that's gone wrong for the Liberals was the divided right has disappeared. It is now the unified right. Indeed, it's so unified, it's downright scary. It is Stephen Harper. You know, Stephen Harper and the 307 dwarfs. That's the that's the right wing now. Boy, are they united. On the other hand, the left is divided as never before. Welcome Elizabeth May, a new face on the left. So the left is divided, the right is united. The divided right that kept John Chrétien in office and made it relatively easy for him is gone. The divided left is the new new. That's why Stephen Harper is the incumbent prime minister and may very well be after October 14th. Very crudely, think of Canada in terms of 40-30-30. 40% are right of center, 30% tended to vote liberal, past tense I'm afraid, and 30% scattered among the other left of center parties. That's a formula for the Conservatives to do pretty well. Now, admittedly, Conservatives never quite get to 40, and these days the Liberals would do anything to get back up to 30, but you still get my basic point. That fragmentation, given our electoral system, and don't get me started on that one, that fragmentation really helps the 40% to do pretty well. And I'm afraid the fifth thing that happened was the new leader. Now, Stéphane Dion's a political scientist. I really shouldn't do this. Not only that, I know Stéphane Dion. He was visiting here in Lethbridge the week before he was appointed to the Liberal cabinet, you know, back under Chrétien. So, unfortunately, Dion has not really worked out. The Liberals had a great leadership race. Even though all the usual suspects disappeared with blinding speed, they brought forward a new set of strong candidates, had a great, interesting leadership race. Unfortunately, it was building toward a deadlock between the two front runners, and the Liberals turned with some relief to a compromised dark horse candidate. Advice to the Liberal Party, these things usually fail. Okay, compromise candidates usually don't work. Every once in a while they do, but you know, don't buy that lottery ticket if you have any options. Dion simply has not caught on as leader. He hasn't looked good in the House of Commons, and he hasn't performed very well in the first part of this campaign. He was stuck with that absurd strategy of denouncing everything the Conservative government suggested, but then never actually voting against it. How can you not look silly if you're obliged to do that? So there's nothing else for Liberals to do, but it damaged morale that brought them out of the House of Commons on a low note, and he hasn't performed well in the campaign, which is my next point. The sixth thing that's gone wrong for the Liberals is another busted campaign. I'm starting to feel like Yogi Berra when he was manager of the famous, hopeless New York Mets back before they became a real baseball team. And he's supposed to have looked at the game once and turned away and shook his head and said, "Doesn't anybody here know how to play this game?" And there are times when you watch election campaigns in Canada and you find yourself forced to say the same thing. The Liberals have stumbled out of the gate so spectacularly, it takes the breath away. I mean, Dion has communicated very badly, at least in English, did better last night. We'll talk about that separately, but he has not come across very well. I really think what really gave that away was after a while, Stéphane Dion stopped appearing in public on his own. He could only come on the stage if somebody else was with him to hold his hand and help whip up the audience. That's the equivalent of now John McCain in the States. Sarah Palin can't go on and give TV interviews unless McCain is there to sit beside her. Why is that? Okay, same message about Stéphane Dion, and the Liberals are sending that message. And I heard on the news recently they're talking about putting together an expert panel of former Liberals, including Paul Martin, to advise Stéphane Dion on economic matters. Why not just run the Conservative ads yourself, saying this guy isn't really a leader, but luckily we have other people too? That's effectively what they're doing. And as I say, I'm sorry to see this about Stéphane Dion, because it would be nice if political scientists could go into public. Okay. But since it's not turning out that way, there's no point in dreaming. So Dion was, in the end, a poor choice for the Liberals. I think you can measure his period as leader of the Liberal Party now in months. No numbers larger than that will be needed. And he's helping depress Liberal fortunes quite badly. Liberals have never fallen below 30% in popular support in over a century. They flirted with 20% in recent public opinion polls. That is bad leadership. I mean, you know, in the end, the coach takes the blame for the team. The team's getting creamed, so the coach pays the penalty. And what makes this poor Liberal campaign more of a problem is that Jack Layton is running one heck of a campaign. I mean, He looks energized and focused. The ads are bright and sassy and confident. He's been staying steadily on message. He's done the best job of any of the leaders in this campaign to work whatever is happening in the news yesterday into the flow of the pattern that he's got for his campaign. He's doing a marvelous job. A for Jack Layton so far in the campaign. Everybody else is stumbling. The conservatives are so busy trying to patch the holes in the dike from the latest goof by somebody. That's been most of their campaign. The Liberals started off heading the wrong direction with a mumbling leader, so they're trying to patch that one up as quickly as they can. And New Democrats have come out as if they actually were ready for an election campaign, knew where they wanted to go, and had some idea of how to get there. Well, that makes it worse for the Liberals. If everybody was running as good a campaign as the Conservatives, this wouldn't be hurting the Liberals as much. But somebody's actually running a campaign. So bad news on that front. So a culmination of all this and a question given greater currency by that single public opinion poll that showed the NDP tied with the Liberals at 21%. Is this it then? Is the NDP going to replace the Liberals as the official opposition, as the left-wing party that will take on Stephen Harper? Well, no. Battered though they are, the Liberal Party just has too many advantages over the NDP this time and possibly next time. First point, the gap in electoral support is just too big to cover over in a single election. And again, the single poll showed the two tied. Okay, first lesson in political science. Never attach too much importance to any single poll, and especially to any single number in a public opinion poll. Always keep an eye on the other polls taken at the same time, and the flow of figures from previous polls by the same company. And always bear in mind that margin of error they print at the end of the public boring part that hardly anybody reads, that's real. I mean, plus or minus 2.6%. Don't think of a line, think of a smudge right across the page, which is 5 percentage points wide. And all we can say is they're somewhere in here, folks. You know, that's what's really going on. The truth is the Liberals have been polling in the low 20s every once in a while, peaking above 25. The NDP has been polling in the high teens every once in a while, poking above 20%. That's a better understanding of where they sit. The gap between the two is still too large to be overcome by a single good day or two. And secondly, not quite the same point, but it sounds like the same point, but it isn't. The gap in seats is just too big to be closed. The lead that the Liberals go into this election over the NDP is something in the margin of 70 seats. That's a lot of, even if you take every single one of them from the Liberals, it won't happen that way. That's still 35. That's a lot of seats. The Liberals still own the Atlantic provinces. They took 20 of the 32 seats last time. They will probably do better. That's a head start. In the province of Quebec, the comeback they were hoping for probably won't happen, but they'll still hold on to that, a dozen seats there, maybe 14. That's a lead over the NDP. The NDP has to make that up. Good news for the NDP in British Columbia, where the Liberal Party may pretty well vanish, and the NDP hopes to move into some of that gap, but you're still starting a long way back. For the New Democrats, this election is going to be fought in Ontario, and the real central battleground is the city of Toronto, which is the Liberal stronghold that gives them the massive head start. 22 seats, 19 of which go Liberal. That's the fortress you got to crack. And by the way, no, the Conservatives won't. Toronto, they're out of it. They will not take any seats. That's where the NDs have to launch their breakthrough. So it's all got to be staked in Ontario, and it's all got to come about as a big seat swing to overcome what's going on elsewhere. Thirdly, given recent developments in the United States, which one or two of you may have noticed on Monday, the new central focus in this Canadian election is going to be on the economy, financial matters, managerial competence. And at the moment, this is a card that Stephen Harper can play better than anybody else. If anything carries him to a majority, it'll be this one. But then everyone knows what I just said, so the Liberals are already after that one, trying to weaken the strength of the sentence I just made. But between the Liberals and the NDP, fairly or unfairly, this is a comparison that favors the Liberals. The Liberals have a stronger record, as long as they keep Bob Rae out of sight, okay? The Liberals have a stronger record of solid financial and economic management than the NDP has. Their reputation is much stronger. If that's the central issue, I think it plays toward the Liberals and away from the New Democrats. To be sure, economic hard times will rally the NDP base, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about reaching out to the middle ground. And I think the new focus on the economy makes that more difficult for the New Democrats. Fourth point, and this struck me more in this election campaign than ever before, the Liberal bench strength is so outstanding it's really unfair. You know, the Tories have Harper, the Dippers have Layton, the Liberals have, I haven't got time for the full list. I mean, they have a whole front bench of credible people with name recognition that can stand up and be listened to. Harper has not developed any such bench on the Conservative side. So if Dion goes, if is a polite word, when is the word I think we should be using, but if Dion goes, the Liberals will mount a good leadership race with a good set of credible candidates. They've got that advantage. In the long run, it's going to be important. In this election, as I say, trying to use your bench strength is just reinforcing the Conservative argument about Dion is not really a leader. But in the long run, that bench strength is important. Fifthly, and I think this is the factor to watch for the rest of the election campaign, the Liberal brand is extremely strong and extremely durable. It took one poor leadership choice and one bad election, and the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada was gone. Well, the Liberals have, you know, with all due respect, made two poor leadership choices, and they're running three poor campaigns, and they're still hanging in there tough. The numbers in the public opinion polls aren't much for Liberals, but they're still pretty good. This is a beach that takes a lot of killing if you're another political party, right? It just doesn't seem to notice. You know, it just will not fall down. I mean, how hard do you have to hit it before it will fall down? So the strength of the Liberal brand is truly remarkable, and I think deep down inside, an awful lot of Canadians still have a basic trust for the Liberal Party, and they aren't quite sure about this Harper fellow and his Conservative friends. In the last two election campaigns, that was the impact in the last 72 hours that took away much better results for the Conservatives. It may very well happen again this time, and that's entirely attributable to the Liberal brand. Now, I should say something about the televised leaders' debate since we're right in the middle of it. I do want to encourage you not to expect anything too exciting to happen either during or after the debate. Now, it's true we all dream of the knockout blow, and we've had a couple in the past, right? I mean, Mulroney killed Turner in 1984. That was the turning point of the election campaign. Turner almost paid him back in spades in the 1988 leaders' debate, and the Conservatives had to scramble like crazy to win the free trade election afterward. I'm afraid that's as good as it ever gets. I hope you watch those two, because you're not likely to get anything that good ever again. The normal way leaders' debates go is everybody is coached to a fairly well to avoid being hit with the knockout punch. This usually means don't try too hard to make a knockout punch yourself, because you're opening yourself up. So it, you know, the level comes, everyone's playing it safe. This is not basketball where the score might go over 100. This is Italian soccer where a single goal being scored is incredibly exciting. You know, that's how leadership debates are played and have to be played. And the format problem is just absolutely devastating in Canada. There are five leaders. Well, okay, what a glorious statement of democracy, how nice we have. No. The real truth for a leaders debate format, five, you design a format that works, okay? This one they used last night actually works way better than the one they had last time, which was a train wreck. Okay, just horrible. Let's all talk at once and see if anybody can hear anybody, you know? That wasn't good. This is better, but it's still five people, right? And everyone gets a turn, and everything cycles around. So even if you're having a bad minute as a leader, and boy, will the people coaching you be mad if you do, but if you have a bad minute, it doesn't matter, because ding, there's no actual ding, but there is an implicit ding as the timekeeper says, now it's time for the next leader. You know, and it's about 6 minutes before anybody gets back to you, and you've got lots of time to rethink what you want to say. The format is devastating. Unless we can find a better format, we will never develop anything remotely comparable to what will be going on in the other. Well, the other channel is going to be train wreck time too. But what will happen in the United States when next time Barack Obama and McCain go at it? Two leaders. Focus time on topics, answer. They can really get into issues. You really can have a building drama towards some kind of conclusion. With our snippets, you know, time to move on to something else, and on the other channel, you know, our format is devastating, so nothing much is going to happen. The metaphor we always use for the leaders' debates is boxing, right? The knockout punch, you know? The real metaphor you should be using is international figure skating, where everybody gets to keep score according to any criteria, whatever. So whenever you talk to people after the debate, who won? Well, my person wiped, like I said, my guy last year. This year I say my person, I noticed. Okay, my person wiped the floor with everybody else. Although you can get an intelligent discussion about who came in second, but not who came in. Of course your person did, no question. I mean, I was checking around on the internet this morning. I was told that Dion won the debate. I was told Duceppe won the debate. I was told that May won the debate by showing up, and I was told that Harper won the debate by not losing, which must mean that Jack Layton lost. Sorry, Jack. No, it doesn't. What it means is you can make up any story you want out of this. And that's what's going to happen, I suspect, again tonight. Although, like you, I will be glued to the television set, okay, sneaking away once in a while, but only for short periods of time. I'll be glued to the television set watching the English version to see what happens, and my fearless prediction is the same thing. Okay, so therefore, not conclusive, there will be no winner, although this will not stop every single party from claiming they won. In a way, that is the modern form, right? Nobody should ever lose because it harms self-esteem. Everybody should go away with a medal. Well, we have a leaders' debate that accomplishes that. Now, I think what the media will focus on is Layton versus Dion for the honor of leading English Canada against the monster Harper. So that may be the frame they've already put on the debate. And if so, frankly, Harper gets away. You know, the advantage for Harper is, of course, it's going to be 4-on-1. That makes you look bigger. 4-on-1 emphasizes the fact, in one sense, the 1 equals the 4. It starts balancing off the implicit egalitarianism of 5 leaders, each with the same size of chair and everything, and each getting the same amount of time. The piling on makes Harper look bigger. So I do think that one hit, you know, Harper wins by not losing. In the long run, I think that may be the our statement about the leaders' debate. Unless, of course, there's a knockout. Okay, yeah. Dream on if you want to. Now, what to watch for on election night? Okay, first of all, don't look at Quebec. Quebec is going to be watching paint dry, okay? When the election was called, we all thought this was Harper's gamble. There were all kinds of votes up for grab because the Bloc was in free fall, and all kinds of votes and all kinds of seats were available, and they would go to the Liberals in Montreal, and they would go to the Conservatives everywhere else, and the only question was, how many? Turns out the answer is just about none, because Bloc support has really firmed up. The Bloc is not in free fall. They're not losing. They're unlikely to gain more seats, he said tentatively, but they're unlikely to lose very many seats either. So the Tories and the Liberals are now both hoping for a gain of, oh, I don't know, maybe 2 seats. 2 seats would be nice. So nothing much is going to happen. Almost every seat in Quebec will be no change. Get used to seeing that on the screen. No change. Okay, if you're not watching Quebec, what should you be watching? Well, watch the Toronto suburban belt. Not Toronto. Toronto itself is going to be its own drama. I'll get to that in a second. But the Toronto suburban belt is where the Conservative charge has fizzled out 2 elections in a row. The Conservative hope is to break Ontario wide open, take most of the seats in Ontario, and ride through that to a majority win. That was the plan in 2004. It didn't work. That was the plan in 2006. Fizzled out on them. Now that the Quebec option has failed miserably, we're back to plan A again, the one that didn't work the last 2 times. Now their hope still is to start, you know, breaking through in Ontario, not the city of Toronto, but the belt around Toronto. So watch to see how blue that section of the Ontario election map goes. The Conservatives want it to be total blue, well, except for Kingston and the islands, which will stay liberal. Apart from that little bleep of red, the whole thing should go blue if the Tory plan is working. Third place to watch is the city of Toronto. If the New Democrats are going to displace the Liberals soon, okay, nothing too dramatic, just soon, they got a breakthrough in Toronto. At the moment, they hold three seats, the Liberals hold all the others. Any number larger than three is good news for the NDP, and a number larger than the Liberal number would be absolutely marvelous news. So watch Toronto to see if that's happening. If McCormick's wrong and the Liberal Party is not going to survive, you will see it in the results from Toronto on election night. And the final place to watch is Vancouver. Now, it's not. There's no question but that BC, the Liberals in BC are in deep trouble. The Liberals are going to lose most of the seats they hold in the province of British Columbia. One poll actually had them running fourth behind the Greens, but I've already warned you about what to do with single polls and single numbers from single polls, so we won't go there. Even if that isn't so, they're not doing very well in British Columbia. So the real question is, will the New Democrats get some of the seats Liberals are going to lose, and they are, or will they lose some seats of their own to the Conservatives who are looking to pick up quite a bit out there? Now, Vancouver itself, though, is much more interesting because there's going to be a close fight in there. The last Liberals to be elected in D.C. will be there. So one seat to look at, well, David Emerson's seat has got to be fun. He was elected as a Liberal but served in the Tory cabinet anyway. That seat is now up for grabs, but both the Liberals and New Democrats think they've got it. So watch this. It'll be a change of hands. There won't be a Conservative winning there. But, you know, which one will it be, the NDs or the Liberals? Second seat to take a look at is Vancouver Quadra. It's a really safe Liberal seat. That was John Turner's old seat. In a by-election earlier this year, the Conservatives came within a hair of taking it, a result that had a lot of jaws dropping. Amazing results. So was that a fluke, or was that a building-up tendency? So watch that seat, see if the Tories can take Quadra. Third seat to look at, of course, is Vancouver Centre, where Lethbridge's own Mike Byers is challenging Heidi Fry, and the Green Party deputy leader is running there as well. So all of these are seats that are well worth looking at in their own right. Vancouver will be an interesting place to watch. That last paragraph, honest, I know. Okay, actually, election night is nicely scripted for us. We will begin the evening with the drama in Central Nova as Peter McKay fights to hold on to his seat. Personally, I think he's more worried about the New Democrat than he is about Elizabeth May, but I agree he is worried the seat is worth watching. And then we will end with the drama in British Columbia, which will tell us whether Harper gets a majority or not. I stuck my neck out on that, but if I'm wrong, I'll be wrong in British Columbia, so you can watch with that in mind. And we'll also have the more focused excitement of the seats I've just mentioned to you. And the best thing is, since I expect a less than conclusive result, we will get to do it all over again before too very long. Thank you.